Today we have Representative Moses, Representative Davis, Williams, Representative Foster, Co-Chair Materio, myself Mulder, Representative Bundy, joined by Representative Phillips, not to be confused with Representative Corey, though she's in his slot, Representative Osterman, and Representative Davies. Today, as you know, we have the statewide teleconference on the proposed draft CS to the budget. And I think most members have, over the weekend, received the copy of the CS and the impact statements as provided by the departments. So we tried to get them out as quickly as possible to make certain people knew what was happening with the budgets. For tomorrow, we will, beginning in the afternoon, 1:30 tomorrow afternoon, begin taking amendments, working on the amendments to the budget. It is my intention, because of a problem, a scheduling problem with one of the financial analysts, to go out of order a little bit and take the Hess amendments first. So just make sure everybody understands that we're going to try and do the Hess amendments first tomorrow, and then we'll proceed from there, because we have a scheduling project, a problem for the following day with Hess. So we'll start with the Hess, and then we'll go down from there. The agenda for today is to go through the off-net sites with the teleconference first, to get to them first, the rural LAOs and the off-nets, until 5 o'clock, and then from 5 to 6 to go to Fairbanks. 6 to 7, we were scheduled for dinner. We'll take a break. If we've not completed the off-net and rural sites, we'll continue to take them through that time period. From 7 to 9, we're scheduled to take testimony from Anchorage, and 9 to 10 to Juneau, from Juneau. And any time that we have in between there, we'll continue to filter people in as they come online. We do have more off-net sites than we actually have hookups for, that people wanting to testify that are off-net than actually available with lines. So those who are on contact or on point right now in off-net sites throughout the state, I'm going to be asking you to, once you've completed your testimony, you're going to have to sign off so that we might be able to hook other people who wish to testify on. So apologize for that, but we have quite a number of folks who do wish to testify. With that, are there any questions from committee members before we begin to take testimony? We are going to try and limit testimony as much as possible to a limit testimony to a minute for an individual, or 3 minutes speaking for a person. And if there's time limited time available afterwards, we'll make more time. You know, we will take additional testimony if you have more comments to make. Apologize for the brevity, but in the interest of trying to allow everyone the opportunity to testify, we're going to try and hold to a bit of a time schedule. For those who are on off-net, when we recognize you, if you could identify for the record your name and spell your last name, it will help us and help the records people to be able to put your testimony accurately in the record. So, except that there are any questions, we will first go to New Steyerhook. Are you there? Is there anyone there at New Steyerhook? Okay, is there someone in Pelican?
Yes, this is Kathy Wasserman, Wasserman, and I'm the mayor of Pelican.
Thank you for joining us, Kathy. Please begin.
Pelican has been greatly impacted by RFQ, the financial situation of Cape Tribal, who purchased and then greatly downsized our processing plant, resulting in a decrease in raw fish tax, sales tax, employment, as well as loss of the fishing fleet. 2 weeks ago, our school board was forced to lay off 3 of our 4 teachers. We are at a loss as to how we will provide our community contribution to the school. We still have the Glacier Bay issue looming, which will affect many of the fishing families in the area. The past 2 days, I was in Juneau at a Southeast LEPC meeting where it was requested that we go home and talk to our councils about funding LEPC training programs and plans in our community. Many small communities will have no one left as an employee to put these plans together. Who will coordinate what goes on in small communities? This speaks to the lack of a comprehensive plan. As members of the Finance Committee, would you be willing to look at my worksheet and help me figure out how to run a community and provide services within the proposed budget cuts? Let's not pare government to the bone and come up with a revenue solution that simply cuts. The legislature appears to have no plan, no solution, and seems to be afraid of increasing taxes or using the permanent fund, but yet proposes slashes that will impact citizens to an even greater degree. It appears that the plan is to have no plan, only short-term, politically safe solutions. Let's be strategic and look at long-term solutions. Perhaps we should first identify what size government should be and then structure the government to fit our needs, not randomly cut until the numbers zero out. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Are there any other individuals there in Pelican, Kathy, that wish to testify?
No, thank you. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. The next site we will go to is Whittier.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Carrie Williams, City Manager in Whittier, last name W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S.
Thank you very much, Carrie, for joining us. Please begin.
The City of Whittier, I would like to support the continued funding of the revenue sharing. This was developed by the state of Alaska and has been cut year after year. It is an incentive program for those of us who are able to raise part of our funds. We're not asking for the state to solely support us. Those who have fee structures are using those to best advantage to be able to support their infrastructure of their community. Whittier is looking at specific increases in taxes, loss of a clinic, and clinic support, and with the economic impact coming to the city of Whittier with the road access, we need every dollar we can get at this point to be ready for that improvement that will come to our community that is heretofore not found any state funding and support. The issue before Whittier at this time would be allow all communities, not just ours, but all communities, time to develop these structures to support themselves. Don't simply cut a program that is critically important, more to many of the Bush communities than ours, that will soon be road connected. But when they try to support themselves, and these programs are based upon our ability to support and fund for our own operations, give us time to transition. We realize we will lose these eventually, but to arbitrarily cut that at this point, not allowing many communities an opportunity to transition in with other fee structures, is totally inappropriate. We would like to support a transition period and support alternate cuts to state budgets and looking at the other funding sources that may help these communities transition out of the impact period. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Williams. Is there anyone else in Whittier that would like to testify?
No, there is not, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Nulato.
My name is Andy Durney. I'm a treasurer for the city of Nulato, and my last name is spelled D, like David, U-R-N-Y. I faxed a letter to the House Finance Committee members yesterday, and I would like to ask that letter be introduced as a testimony. I'm not going to read it because I don't think I have time to do that. I would like to add that if you do eliminate state revenue sharing and municipal assistance, it would have a drastic effect on the ability of local governments in almost every community throughout the state to offer public services. I believe that Alaska has the resources to address the budget gap without eliminating public services. But we will never close the budget gap if all we do is cut programs while handing out bigger and bigger permanent fund checks. I believe it's time to put a cap on the fund, to use the earnings of the permanent fund, to institute a state tax, and to make reasonable cuts to the state budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in Nulato that would like to testify, Andy?
No, there's no one else.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. The next location we'll go to is Hooper Bay.
Let me unmute him before. You should be able to speak now.
Okay. Are you there, Hooper Bay? I think we lost him there for a second. We'll come back to Hooper Bay. Is there someone in Ambler?
Yes, my name is Barbara McManus.
Barbara?
M-A-C, capital M-A-N-U-S.
Thank you very
and
much.
I'm calling in from the village of Ambler. It's a village of about 330 up on the Cobun River. I'm calling because I'm also the mayor here, and I'm calling because I'm very concerned about the future of our city government and if it will continue to exist at all. The small rural communities are very dependent on revenue sharing because there is very little tax base in our village to provide funds. We are dependent also for running the city's property on the information received from the DCRA. None of our city workers are on a full-time basis as is, and so we provide minimal services already. A city administrator and clerk only work 6 hours a day, and our water sewer operators, plant operators, BPO maintenance personnel all work from 3 to 4 hours, so they're hardly full-time jobs as it is. We would not be able to provide any water sewer, electrical power, minimal police and fire protection, health clinic maintenance and operations, health facilities, or road work, even at a minimal level if we've lost revenue sharing. And we would probably end up dissolving our municipal government. It just seems that most of the resources that the state gives are come from rural areas to begin with, and that it always seems true that there should be a share of that going out to the rural communities to help provide public services. Also, the DCRA is our only link to how to operate within the workings of state government. And in our region, we have a one-person office, and she's overworked already and could use more help. She provides us with training for city councils and city staff on laws, our rules and procedures, accounting system training, tax reporting training and assistance, grant writing training and reporting, including administration of grants, training of election boards, judges, and the duties of city clerk, ordinance resolution and policy development, utility management training and workshops, community project planning, including long-range plans, economic development, and capital improvement planning assistance. The DCRA is the only department that gives us local assistance. The local staff is familiar with our needs, and I can't say enough for all the help that we receive from our local DCR staff person. Combining DCRA with the DCED would dilute our assistance, especially if the funding for this merger is reduced in the future. We need revenue sharing to exist as a city municipality and to provide services to our village, and we need the local DCR staff in order to understand the workings of the state government. And thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much for joining us, Barb. Is there anyone else there in Ambler, Barb?
We have other people listening, but I don't think anybody else wants to speak.
All right. Thank you very much. The next site we will go to is Kweefluk. Is there anyone in Kweefluk? Okay. We will go on to Alakanuk. Okay, is there anyone in Alakanuk?
How do you pronounce this?
Nunipichuk?
Nunipichuk?
Nunipichuk? Is there anyone in Nunipichuk?
Close enough.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
No? Yeah, this is Robert Nick, last name N-I-C-K. I'm the mayor of the city of Nunipichuk. And I'm happy to participate this afternoon in this important teleconference. And I'd like to speak on behalf of the city. Our city was incorporated 30 years ago, and city services have been a big help to our community. in the last 3 decades. Municipal assistance, now known as State Community Program and the State Revenue Sharing, are a vital funding source for a municipal government. Neighboring villages have dissolved their cities, and this budget cutting will prompt our city to dissolve once these funds are discontinued. The revenue sharing funds and the municipal assistance program funds help us to maintain our public safety, you know, to pay our village police program, and then to provide fire protection, and then for the operation of our water and sewer program, and then for the administration of our municipal government, for the operation of our washateria, for the maintenance, you know, of our planning and zoning committee, for refuse collection, for our street lights, for our recreation programs, and in our jail services. We have tried raising our 2% sales tax 3 times in the last 6 years, but resident voters have turned it down. If revenue sharing funds are eliminated, we will have no choice but to raise local taxes and possibly promote gambling, which is prohibited by our elders, if we don't elect to dissolve our municipal form of government. We need these two programs funded in order to continue our basic city services. And I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Robert, for joining us. Is there anyone else there that would like to testify?
No, I am alone.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. Next, we'll go to Clark's Point.
Hello, this is Imogene Gardner, last name G-A-R-D-I-N-E-R.
Thank you.
I am the mayor of Clark's Point. I would strongly urge the representatives in the House Finance Committee to consider leaving the municipal assistance of state and the revenue sharing dollars there as they are, because many of us communities, large and small, within the state, greatly rely on these dollars. Clark's Point is in Bristol Bay. We are greatly impacted by the fishing disaster and the cut in our raw fish tax dollars that we receive. The city of Clark's Point strongly needs to look at our budget, where we're going to start saving money. If the state starts cutting dollars, I feel very strongly they should give us time to take a look at what we are going to do or how we can prepare for the future for our communities. These dollars help our community for providing water and sewer services, road maintenance, dumps. We don't employ that many, have that many employees here in this community, and our employees also do not work full time. Some of our employees only get paid for 2 hours a day. Our office workers, 5. I would strongly ask that you continue to keep the municipal assistance and revenue sharing dollars there for us communities. We're impacted too much right now. That is all I have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gardner. Is there anyone else from Clark's Point that wishes to testify?
No, there isn't, and thank you very much for letting me have this opportunity.
All right. You have a nice evening. Next, we'll move on to Russian Mission. Is there someone in Russian Mission?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It's Jim Duffy. I'm the mayor of the city up here. I just wanted to echo pretty much the same thing that the other villages have been saying, that without the revenue sharing or the state communities funds that come in every year, the city would more than likely have to dissolve. These funds, along with the other programs that some of the other villages have mentioned, the revenue sharing is used to pay for the insurance that the city has. Without the insurance, if we couldn't afford to pay the insurance, it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for the city to operate without insurance. And I just wish that you could look to other areas, or like some of the other villages have said, without completely eliminating the program, at least put the villages on notice that the program will be phased out rather than just to be cut off. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duffy. Is there anyone else in Russian Mission that wishes to testify?
No, I'm the only one here.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining us. Next, we will move
on.
Thank you. Have a nice evening. The next location we'll move to is Gakona.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for allowing us to come aboard the telephone today and talk with you briefly. Very quickly, I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and the proposed budget cuts to that area. As you know, we in the industry were in your city this last week, and we spent a great deal of time and what we thought was a very productive time, in that we have come to terms with the administration on our new contract with tourism and the state, and we are very much wishing and praying that you will honor the budget as we had it last year at the level of $5.3 million, so that we can begin to make a very effective and prudent change in the way that tourism will be marketed in the future, with the industry carrying the majority share of the load. We're very excited about the new prospects of us going into this private-public cooperative effort on the new Millennium Plan, and we will very much appreciate you giving us this one more assistance of continuing our budget this one more year so that we can begin the process of getting this aboard. Thank you very much, and you gentlemen have a long night ahead of you. I wish you the very best.
Sir, appreciate that. Could you identify yourself for the record for the for our secretary?
Yes, this is Alan LeMaster. I am in Gakona, Alaska. I'm the owner of a small business here called Gakona Junction Village.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. LeMaster. Good night. Next, we'll move to New Halen. Yes, are you there, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is the Mayor, Wasi Baluta.
Could you spell your last name, Mr. Baluta?
B-A-L-L-U-T-A.
All right, thank you. Please begin.
Yes, I would like to say, like what other rural Alaska area said about the revenue sharing and the safe community, it will affect our villages and communities because we depend on the revenue sharing and safe community very much out here. And if the state cut the revenue sharing and safe community money out, we're going to have to go back to the Indian country, in which I know a lot of the communities in urban areas don't like to hear, but that's what's going to happen out here. So I would justify that the state keep the state community and revenue sharing of money in at 100%. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baluta. Is there anyone else in New Halen that would like to testify?
Yes. Yes. My name is Lim Batchelder. I'm a city councilman for New Halen City.
Yes, Mr. Batchelder, could you spell your last name, please?
Yes, it's spelled B-A-T-C-H-E-L-D-E-R.
All right, please begin, sir.
All right, I'm concerned also with the cuts in the revenue sharing, and I would think that there's other ways that the state could raise money besides getting rid of the cities, which in fact I would believe that this action will eliminate most cities. It probably will eliminate New Halen, as people have testified, due to the insurances and things of that nature. As Wasi has said, there's, you know, the Indian Country program that we've been dealing with, or combining the city with the tribal councils. We're looking into all areas there, but I just can't see how the state of Alaska can eliminate such a number of cities with a stroke of a pen. That, to me, is going backwards. That is not going forward. There's other ways, you know. I mean, if you're concerned with the price of oil, the price of oil is going up nowadays. If you're concerned with the price of oil, why do we allow one company, a British company, to control the oil industry? Our mining industry, out here we have approximately $11 to $16 billion known reserve, 11 miles from this city, and due to state regulations and stuff, we can't get at it. The mining company, it makes it almost impossible. If you need, if you could take and talk to the legislators, maybe, and get some of these things relieved a little bit, you know, we could put maybe 2,000 people to work, and we wouldn't need your handouts. Personally, I'd like to see us be able to handle it on our own. But when you holding us down with one hand and taking our bread and butter away from us with the other one, you make it kind of hard on us. I would definitely like to see you leave the revenue sharing as it is in place until some other methods can be thought over. I appreciate your time, and I would like to let another gentleman testify.
Please go right ahead. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Hello, my name is Jerry Clay. I am presently the city clerk of New Haven.
Jerry Clay?
L-A-Y, yes.
All right. Please proceed, Jerry.
I am concerned that this budget cut is coming, as it were, in one fell swoop. The budget cuts of this magnitude and significance to the health, safety, and welfare of Alaska people, you would think would be done within the framework of a comprehensive, coherent, publicly accepted long-term fiscal plan. Like Mr. Batchelder has testified, this is not possible to do in the time frame of the three-month legislative session. We can take care of ourselves out here, but we are going to need cooperation on the part of the legislature to develop the resources out here so we can take care of ourselves. For instance, we can mine the existing reserves of Cominco, Alaska out here, or the company can. There are other gold reserves that can be done. If we could get some kind of acknowledgement that there are ways to mine safely out here, possibly such things as lower the lease fees and cooperate with the company to pay back percentages of their profits on a acceptable level to both parties, much the way that it's done with the oil companies, I think that we can take care of ourselves. So please help us to do this gradually, rather than just cut us off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Is there anyone else in New Haven?
No, that's all we have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us this evening. Next, we'll move on to Kaufman Cove.
Hello.
Hello.
Pat McDonald, Councilman Jerry Hedges, Richard Young, and Special Project Administrator D.E. Jeffries.
Did you want to speak for everyone, Pat?
Yes, I will.
Please.
How do you politically correctly say that doing this would screw us? We don't have any way to run our city if they get rid of the revenue sharing. And the thoughts here are, why did they let us become a second-class city and get this far along in our business if they're going to shut us down? We don't support eliminating the state revenue sharing and safe communities program. Many of the residents who are in the logging industry have lost their jobs already, and this would only mean more lost jobs and lost local cut services. So we have to have revenue sharing to be a viable city if they're going to take this away. We can't do it. We're going to be out of business. So Maybe they can let us know where to send our bills to. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. McDonald. Is there anyone else in Kaufman Cove that wish to testify, Pat, or were you speaking on behalf of everyone?
I was speaking on behalf of everyone. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us this evening. Next, we will go to South Naknek. Is there anyone in South Naknek, please? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, please identify yourself.
My name is Peter Angerson.
All right, thank you for joining us, Peter. Please begin.
Okay, first of all, I live in South Naknek, and South Naknek is dated back to 4 BC. And it's been traditionally a fishing community. And before the oil boom, the fishing industry supported the state of Alaska. And also, a lot of things I hear, you know, I agree with, is that we need the support from the state of Alaska, because without the support of our legislators, we're like on a sinking ship like the Titanic, and for sure, said a 1,500 will perish, but many thousands will. I get a lot of feedback from the people here in South Naknek is that Alaska is going to be a rich man's playground, because without the revenue sharing and without the funding that we get from the state, we're not going to make it. Our electrical here for our lights and everything are very expensive. And I get in the mail here that the state's not going to help pay for the electrical, you know, and that's going to be hard as well. And we need, you know, like I say, we're a fishing community. And for how many years now we've been having disastrous years? I've been fishing for over 29, 30 years. And I'm having a hard time as it is now, but I don't like to see that federal disaster program leave us until fishing at least picks up on its feet. But, you know, I don't want to see our television come off the air, because a lot of us depend on the ARC television. Because without our television, we don't know what's happening around the state. And if we don't know what's happening around the state of Alaska, as far as news and what you legislators are doing down there, we're kept in the dark and blind, and we don't know which way we're going as far as our political way of life than Juno. But I'd like to thank you for hearing me.
Well, thank you for joining us, Peter. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else there, Peter, in South Naknek that wishes to testify?
It's just myself.
All right. You have a nice evening.
You too. Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll go next to Hughes.
Excuse me, not the online.
All right. Then we'll go to Eagle.
Hello. I'm calling from Eagle, Alaska. My name is Sonia Sager.
All right.
160 people live here, and we don't want to see the budget for public broadcasting cut. We depend on ARC TV and NPR radio for the weather report, which includes the cold and storm warnings and all that, and for the news, the political information. The only time we see our candidates speak is during the television debates. The educational children's programs are also very important to us, and we really need this link. We want to fully participate and be informed on the political system, and we want to know what's going on in the rest of the world and feel connected to the rest of the state. Please don't cut the public broadcasting funds, because it'll only widen the gulf between rural and urban Alaska.
All right, Sonia, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in Eagle?
No, but everybody feels the same.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking your time this evening.
Yes, thank you very much.
Next, we'll go back up to Nanana.
I'm here.
Yes, please identify yourself for the record.
Bob Knight, Mayor of Nanana.
Bob, what's your last name? I'm sorry.
I'd like to talk about revenue sharing municipal assistance cutting. I'm depending on it for 15% of my budget, which is $642,000, and it's we've cut not $66,000 out of that portion. If you cut out revenue sharing or municipal assistance, safe communities program, and we are holding the line on our employees, and we need this money to operate. And I know that other communities, 25 cities, depend on it for 40% of their revenues to operate the city. So it's going to hurt everybody.
All right. Bob, could we get your last name again?
K-N-I-G-H-T.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Bob. Is there anyone else in Nanana?
Not right now.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Huna. Is there anyone in Huna? Okay. To Hooper Bay.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My name is Joan Dewey, D-E-W-E-Y.
Good afternoon, Joan.
Yes, hello. We accidentally pressed star 5, and it's not pretty what happened. but we are eager, really eager to express our concern about proposed cuts to family support services. You know, with the changes in the child protection law last year, we looked at those with both reservation and then also hope. To have severe cuts, and I consider them severe, to social workers, the case workers that would be the frontline workers working with the families in terms of the additional support services that would be needed, is a very frightening thing to me. Our children will be gambling with Alaska's future in terms of human resource here, and we do, in fact, have a severe shortage of frontline workers. I can assure you, I'm a social worker in family preservation and support. I work in Bethel. I'm in Hooper Bay this week doing family preservation and support. We definitely need more frontline workers who are working with families to intervene and promote positive change, and we need those support services desperately. To have the public awareness and the hope that was given with the disclosure last year and the support of changes in the law and the resources that were to be available, and then to take them away without allowing enough time to transition with the new law, this is a very frightening thing. This means the children are at risk of losing their families, and the parents do not have the support services they truly need. And I'm living in a part of Alaska where there are basic human needs that are not met. We were hit hard with the fishing shortage here. We have people who do not have enough money for fuel, for heat, for housing, for food. And this is a reality here. And I'm from an urban area. I've been living here for 2 years now. This is a very serious problem. With these kinds of stressors, it's very hard to work on the other more serious issues that impact a family and their ability to nurture and provide a safe and loving home for their children. So I ask you to please rethink and get more information on what you are intending to do in terms of cutting social workers. They are desperately needed. And also the fetal alcohol support grant for the education and preventative work, the efforts that were started in the community. Please don't cut this short. We need it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joan. We'll go back up. I understand Huna is back online. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, this is Mary Albert Dick.
Good afternoon, Albert. Please begin.
I want to speak to the state revenue share portion. No, I've been the mayor here for going on 9 years, and this is the greatest attempt to create a hardship to our town, and we're very concerned about this. You know, this last 7 years has been extremely difficult to provide some kind of form of public service. Last year, when we had our major cut on revenue share, and I had
Are you still there, Albert?
Looks like he disconnected himself.
We lost you, Albert. So we will come back shortly. We'll move on to Ambler in the meanwhile. Are you there, Ambler? Excuse me, Kweefluck. Okay, back to Alakanuk.
That sounds like it.
Okay, Chivak?
Yes. Hello?
Hello, please identify yourself from Chivak. Thank you for joining us, Richard. Please begin.
I wanted to thank you guys for inviting comments surrounding issues that affect our lives and the well-being of our tribal member children. And I will be speaking on the issue of cuts that may be that are being considered for our child protection services. I'm a tribal court administrator liaison, and I'm also a member of the Alaska Tribal CASA project and a member of the Alaska Native Indian Child Welfare Association board. I wanted to make a couple comments today. The population, you know, for this entire region is growing at an unprecedented rate. And since 1990, the U.S. Census population has increased 21% right here in Chivak. Children under the age of 18 make up more than half of Chivak's population, and that's 52%. Since 1989, cases of reported child abuse have increased 99.4% in the state of Alaska. There are 2,280 out-of-home care in the state of Alaska by March 1 of 1999. In addition, the DFYS is serving 684 children in state custody in their own homes. The children that are in state custody within the Bethel area are 95% Native. Rural Alaska has a much more harder task of documenting child abuse because of our lack of telephones, absence of police officers, especially law enforcement, and lack of funds thereof. The absence of hospitals, doctors, and extreme remoteness of many of these villages. It is our belief that there are still many people even within this area and this time of day that there's a lot of these people that may not know where to go or where to turn to when they are faced with problems of child abuse and or neglect. The Chivak Tribal Courts have a children's coach, which the Chivak Traditional Council enacted, which will somebody, they set their guidelines to safeguard their tribal member children, and also to acknowledge that their tribal member children are their most valuable resource. At the onset of the establishment of the Chilak Tribal Courts, the Traditional Council passed a resolution delegating their authority to the Chilak Tribal Courts to intervene on their behalf.
Richard, could you conclude, please? We're trying to hold Richard, if you could conclude, please. We're trying to hold testimony to 1 minute or thereabouts.
I only have a couple more comments I'd like to say, and I won't be that much longer. State of Alaska is being that they are out of compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act, and especially with all of these new laws that non-compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act are that a lot of these Native children may be adopted out, that which would be detrimental to the continued existence of the tribes across Alaska. Any touch to child protection would be like a form of a diplomatic genocide because that these children would not be protected. And especially the services for reunification were being discontinued. The Bethel area consists of approximately 54 villages with village of Chilak, and an average intervenes on 10 to 20 cases. There's been 20 to 30 reports of harm that were not investigated.
Richard, please conclude.
To the overload of cases.
Richard, I have over 100 people signed up to testify, and I'm not trying to be harsh. I just want to make certainly
okay,
give everyone
yeah.
an opportunity.
Okay, yeah. The Kashutami tribe is urging you not to consider cutting funds for child protection.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. And I would remind people who are on teleconference, we are trying to hold testimony down to approximately a minute, 3 minutes if you're testifying on behalf of a group, because we do have a lot of people who wish to testify. I will go back up to Seldovia.
Seldovia.
Yes, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Susan Hex. I'm the mayor for the city of Seldovia.
Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon. I'd like to speak today for the community of Seldovia and urge you to reconsider your proposal to eliminate the state revenue sharing and municipal assistance program. This action would have a devastating effect on our city. This cut is 12% of our entire budget. We are a small, rurally isolated community, suffering from declining population. We currently have about 290 residents and a high rate of seasonal employment. The alternatives available to us to make up this shortfall will have a detrimental effect on our year-round citizens and drastically affect public health and safety. Our only options would be to raise the mill rate, which is already the highest on the Kenai Peninsula, or lay off personnel. And with the few city employees we do have, it might mean closing entire departments. Our economic picture is very bleak. The only cannery that we had remaining in town, the roof collapsed on it last year until they destroyed the structure. So we've lost that economic feasibility for this community. The programs affected by this cut would mean, as I said, 12% of our entire city budget, but it would also mean 100% of our funding for our share of three health facilities. It might even mean closing our medical clinic here in the community and losing the only doctor on this side of Kachemak Bay. It would mean 75% of our snow removal and road maintenance budget. It would be 12% of the entire emergency medical services, fire, and police department budget. We have no fluff in our departments or in our city budget. There's nothing to cut. We're down to the bare bones. We might even have the possibility of losing our Alaska State Trooper contract, which provides police protection outside of the city limits. to the residents living out in the portion of the borough area and outside of the city limits. So I am asking you to reconsider this proposal that you have. Larger communities have higher populations and bigger tax bases and other alternatives to draw from. Small communities of Saldovia and other areas in rural Alaska do not have these resources available, and this will drastically change the quality of life in small municipalities all over the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Susan, for testifying. Is there anyone else in Saldovia?
No, I'm speaking for the community.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next, we'll move to Uzinki.
Uzinki,
right.
This is Zach Kitchenhoff, Mayor of the City of Uzinki.
Welcome, Zach. Please begin.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to repeat some of the problems or concerns from the other villages. As far as state revenue sharing and municipal assistance or state communities, whatever, you don't have any way to raise any taxes, no base whatsoever here. And the community of probably 250 people, and there is no work around here. Probably you only have maybe about three or four people hired, hopefully, to help here in the city office. And I think it's responsibility of the state to ensure that our Alaskans have basic services like public safety, fire protection, sanitation, health, and so forth. And another program that bothers me is the power cost equalization, which was mentioned by some other of the communities, and put a terrible burden on local citizens, especially jobless, where our power is probably twice, maybe over that, compared to some of the larger communities. And we'd appreciate whatever you can do to keep these programs on the line rather than eliminate them. And thank you for letting me come on here. That's all I have.
Thank you very much for joining us, Zach. Is there anyone else in Uzinki?
I'm Dave Campfield. I'm the VPSO here for the City of Uzinki and also a City Council member.
Hi, Dave.
I just made a quick guesstimate of the number of jobs that would be lost by this budget cut. It comes up to about 10 right off the bat. I'm sure hoping that they make the right decision and keep these budgets in place. We would be totally devastated by it. There's no possible way that we could continue to run as a city. Like some of the other villages, we'd be forced to go back to a tribal rule and an Indian country type of situation. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for testifying, Dave. Is there anyone else there in Uzinki?
We're the only ones. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us this evening. Next, we'll go to Port Lyons.
Hello.
Hello, is this Robert?
Yes, this is Robert Wagner, the mayor of Port Lyons. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me this time to bring up on this state revenue sharing and safe communities that will affect Port Lyons by a little over one-third of our budget, which at the time, trying to put a budget together for 2000 is really difficult as it is. This will cut into our streets, roads, admin, DPSO, fire equipment maintenance, and our health department, which is, in the small communities, it's just hard enough to keep these things rolling as it is. I had a few more things written down here, but I'm not going to say them. I was on hold for almost an hour. And boy, I just feel that what these other communities have been saying and that, I just can't even imagine where you gentlemen and ladies could pass this. So I thank you for the time and that, and I hope things go the right way.
Thank you for joining us, Robert.
All right.
It's now 5:15, and we've been scheduled to take Fairbanks up at 5 o'clock. because we started a little late, I decided to go a little further. We do have a number of folks signed up in Fairbanks. What we will do is those individuals who are signed up on the teleconference on the off-net sites, if you'll stay on, we'll go to Fairbanks. We won't take a break at 6 o'clock. We'll keep on working right on through the lunch hour or the dinner hour and take testimony from off-net sites again. So please stay online, and we will be back to you shortly. We'll go now to Fairbanks. And again, to remind individuals, I do have your name spelled here, so that's good. You don't have to spell your names, but if you would try to testify, keep your testimony to a minute. First one I have signed up is Diana Campbell and then Celia Hunter. Diana, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. My name is Diana Campbell. I'm here on behalf of Panama Chiefs Conference to speak on tobacco settlement money. Panama Chiefs Conference would like to go on record saying 100% of the tobacco settlement money should go towards improving the health of Alaska citizens, primarily through tobacco programs. We also feel a portion of the money should go to other public health programs, including substance abuse. We are puzzled and amazed that this committee would direct that none of the settlement money would go towards any kind of tobacco program. It seems to us that the money should go towards tobacco use prevention, cessation, education, health care, and enforcement. The state took the legal risk on behalf of the health of Alaskan people, and now to say that the tobacco settlement money would not go towards public health is baffling, if not outrageous. This money belongs to the people of Alaska and to those affected by tobacco products. This includes those who smoke, sniff, chew, those who are targeted by tobacco companies to become new addicts, and those dealing with tobacco illnesses and deaths. This is a good time to do wonderful and innovative things to combat tobacco use. To do nothing at this golden time is wasteful. It does not meet the expectations of public trust that binds you to office. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana. The next person we have is Celia Hunter and then Ginny Wood.
My name is Celia Hunter, and I'm testifying on behalf of public television. I understand that you are funding public radio, which is a vital ingredient to many households in Alaska, and particularly Elton Bush. Public television is an equally essential item for many people here in Alaska, and one of the things to remember is that people who view public television, who listen to public radio, contribute out of their own pockets as much as they can to support these programs, which are not merely entertainment, but are information and very vital needs, for instance, the Alaska weather and that sort of thing. And they offer positive programming for children, and I think this is something that all parents in the listening areas are very, very concerned about. So I would think that we should find ways of funding public television and keeping it on the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Celia. Next we have Ginny and then Dan Lasota.
My name is Ginny Wood. I'm a 52-year resident of Interior Alaska. I protest the slashing of funding to public TV. That's the only station that I watch because of its superior programming and quality and content, and it doesn't have commercial interruptions in the middle of a program. I think the citizens' contributions should indicate how much it means to our community. I don't know how long ago it was that the national, and I found out that Fairbanks denoted were the highest to contribute, highest amount contributed to public TV of any other, in proportion to its population, of any other place in the United States. I think that they have done a tremendous job, Alaska One, in doing more with less, and still having quality programs, and that should be not penalized, it should be rewarded.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony, Jenny. Next we have Dan Lasota and then Gene Richardson.
Chairman Mulder, House Finance Committee members, my name is Dan Lasota. I'm representing the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We're here to officially oppose your 100% cut to municipal assistance and revenue sharing, or SAFE Communities as it's now called. This would mean a $3.1 million cut to Fairbanks. Basically, that would put us in a hard spot of making a choice between fixing leaky roofs, or rather not fixing leaky roofs, shutting down libraries, or more likely passing on layoff cuts to our school district. That would, I've been told, be about equal to 55 teachers. We do not have the option of raising additional taxes because of a voter-approved tax cap. I ask you to think about how this gets you any closer to closing a $1 billion perceived revenue problem. And although that's, I don't think it's going to get you any closer to solving that problem, it's going to have dire effects back here in Fairbanks and across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dan, before you leave, Representative Terrio has a question for you.
Dan, in the past, and thank you for coming on behalf of the Assembly, in the past we have entered into dialogued with the municipal governments on things that we could do to help them deal with their budget situation and our budget situation. I'm wondering if at this point you anticipate the Fairbanks Assembly entering into that kind of discussion so that we don't just have a we versus them argument.
I hope to work closely with you, Representative Terrio. I believe the mayor has, Mayor Hank Hove has scheduled a 17th meeting with the Interior delegation and other legislators here in Fairbanks. I could express to you my personal feelings, but I wouldn't want to do that without the consent of the Assembly. I believe very shortly, within a month's time, the Assembly will make specific recommendations for the legislature as far as what you can do for additional revenues.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. Next, we have Jean Richardson and then Terry Tyler.
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank the subcommittee on the university. Students of the University of Alaska really appreciate your efforts and your recognition of the fact that we do need an increase of $16.3 million to operate this year at anything like the level that we should be operating at. And I'm very unhappy that the actual needs of the university, as recognized by President Hamilton, the Board of Regents, and the subcommittee, are not even being brought to the table. That what overall has come out of the subcommittee is a flat budget, which we all know amounts to a decrease of $8.9 million the university has to find to take out of the existing program due to fixed cost increase. The university is essential to the future of Alaska, as this is apparent. And there are alternate revenue sources available, and there's been enough damage to the university. I've been there personally to tell most of you how much damage there's been. This is the time to use those alternate sources of funding.
All right, Jean, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. Have you concluded?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us. Next, we have Terry Tyler and then David Leon.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We're hearing some kind of music.
We are too.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I just was concerned.
We thought maybe it was an interesting backdrop to your testimony.
Someone's dancing on the grave.
We'll go ahead then.
Please do. We'll try and identify the source of it.
Thank you.
Go right ahead, Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time. My name is Terry Taylor. I'm with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and also a student legislative affairs assistant up here at the university. The reason why I'm coming to talk is to support President Hamilton's budget of an increase of $16.3 million. This increase will not be an increase in budget for the university. It's something that's been needed for the past couple of years. While I was down there last week, we got told we needed to wait and hold our breath, but the university, over the past 5 years, has not only held its breath, but it's been cut to the point where we cannot cut anymore. Like President Jean Richardson stated before, this is not this would not be a flat funding. This would be a cut to the point now that the university cannot even afford flat funding. This investment that would come in with the $16.3 million would turn out to be an $840 million increase into the revenue of the state of Alaska. This would come through not only students loans coming in from government Pell grants, but also research money that would come in from outside organizations. I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon, and have a nice day.
All right. Thank you very much, Terry, for coming forward. We also, next we have David Leone and then Nancy Hummel.
Thank you. This is David Leone, Executive Director of the Resource Center for Parents and Children, Chair of the Arctic Alliance for People here in Fairbanks. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. During my recent trip to Juneau, I met with many of you to talk about our children. I emphasize that our children are our most precious natural resource. Indeed, the future of Alaska is very much dependent on the health and welfare of today's children. Each of those members I spoke with agreed with this concept. And yet here we are looking at significant cuts that directly and negatively impact today's children. I don't understand how you can appreciate that the future is dependent on what we do for our children today and then turn around and make these cuts. Instead of short-term reaction to our budget situation, we must have long-term solutions. These solutions begin and end with our children. For the sake of our children today and Alaska's citizens tomorrow, please reinstate the funding to the following: differential response to child protection, independent living program, foster care base rate caseload growth, foster care training, training for adoptive parents of special needs children, emergency shelter and treatment care for children, new child protection staff, healthy families program, child health insurance program outreach, and especially the fetal alcohol syndrome program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Apologize for mispronouncing your last name.
No problem.
All right. Then we go to Nancy Hummel and then Mike Prax.
Hello. My name is Nancy Hummel. I'd like to ask you to restore full funding for public television. One legislator called it a nicety. In my family, it's a necessity. We have two young children, and television stations that are not PBS offer rude, obnoxious children in the show that they have for them. The commercials entice them into sugary cereals and things like that. I really enjoy public TV. I ask my students at school to watch public television when it correlates with our curriculum. I offer extra credit for their watching of it and then writing up something about it. My children and my husband and I sit down to watch PBS all the time, the nature shows, Wishbone, musicals such as Cats that have been on their programming. I have a 10-year-old boy and a 12-year-old boy, and trying to get them to a musical isn't easy. I suggest that you find ways to fund this so that we can get the federal funding necessary. And it not just entertains, it educates every show. So I urge you to say yes to public TV. We have a one-income family, and we support it generously every year. And I would hope that you would acknowledge our support for it by giving your support to it.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Next, we have Mike Prax and then Dick Ferris.
Yeah, thank you. This is Mike Prax. I want to talk about the most basic public service that the state is providing, that is the police protection. This afternoon, there was an armed robber in my dad's store. It took 3 calls and 15 minutes to get the police there. And I am not, the guy ran out before the police got there, but they found him, and I'm sure that he's going to get off and get virtually no punishment, nothing's going to happen there. I'm not asking for more money. I think we'd be better off personally with less, then we'd make the decision to take action and protect ourselves. I think it establishes a false sense of protection. I'd like to ask for less. And then for all of these other programs, the only way to decide all of these needs is to give the money to the individuals through the dividend program, and they can support the programs that they prefer. So I'd like you to encourage more decentralization and give the money back to the people where it belonged in the first place, let them make the decision from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Next person is Dick Ferris, and then Pamela Held.
Yes, I'm Dick Ferris, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in here. And I want to speak, one, on behalf of public television. I really resent any cuts in this outstanding program we have and the adverse effect it has on the community. But I'm also really concerned about the proposed 16% cut in the Department of Labor, which would result in essence, defunding OSHA, which would bring a federal bureaucracy into Alaska to take care of the needs now taken care of by Alaska themselves. So I really think the legislature should look both at funding public television and not cutting the Department of Labor any. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dick. Next to Pamela Held and then Jake Poole.
Yes, I'm Pamela Held. I'm President and CEO of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce and represent 800 members, about in excess of 10,000 people in Interior Alaska. I'm here on behalf of support for the University of Alaska. We are asking you to fund it with the additional $6.3 million. Since 1986, the university has decreased its dependence on the state general funding from nearly 70% down to 46%. This has been done through downsizing, reduction of administrative costs, increased efficiencies, and cutting program offerings. And to partially offset this decline in revenue, there have been increases in tuition, return on investment or university lands, private sector contributions, and endowments, matching corporate or federal funds. In addition, cries for new leadership at the university have been answers to the hiring of Mark Hamilton. We are asking tuition can't be increased anymore. We need to have more money. The state, I think, in the long term, to have a premier university system, needs to look at a plan to make certain that we fund K through U plus vocational education. It's in the best interest of our workforce as a whole, and we need the money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pamela. I appreciate your testimony. Next to Jake Poole and then Scott Calder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jake Poole. I'm the Executive Director of the UAF Alumni Association. I represent over 20,000 UAF alumni who strongly support the University of Alaska budget request. The university is an investment in the future of Alaska and is an investment in the most precious natural resource that we have, our students. I was in Juneau in February and was very encouraged by the discussions I had with many of the legislators and many of the people sitting in that committee presently. However, today I'm a little bit discouraged in what I've seen in regards to the budget. When I was there, there was lots of discussion about alternative ways of sourcing funds. There were discussion about the importance of the university, but we're still where we were a year ago. Still with a flat budget, it's going to impact dramatically on our university. The alumni hope that you will consider alternative funding as an option, as a way to look at how we can fund the 16.3, and we hope that you will look at the $16.3 million increase as an investment in your state, in our state, and in the children of the state of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jake. Next, we have Scott Calder and then Hugh Fate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going over the budget documents available in this room, and we have about 100 people here at the Fairbanks LIO office. And I noticed that UAF looks like it's getting the governor's request. And just going down the list here, it looks like department by department, administration plus $6 million, education plus $18 million, public safety plus $4 million, legislature minus $1 million. Department of Law minus $60,000, UAF plus $23 million from last year. These are all compared to last year's budget's authorization. Corrections plus $11 million. And then I got to my friends at the Department of Health and Social Services, and I discovered that there was a completely inscrutable document here that does not give any total budget figures that are comparable either to House Bill 50 or to the other budget documents that the other House Finance Summary is in the room. So I'm a little disappointed that I can't evaluate that today. And I understand that it was just freshly rewritten today when I inquired about that. Okay. I think you should ask the governor to implement Alaska Statute 4714-200. It's been 10 years. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott. Next we have Dr. Fate and then Alice Muro.
Thank you very much, the co-chairs Theriot and Mulder and members of the House Finance Committee. I am Hugh Fate. I am the chairman of the Board of Directors of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Also, I sit on the Executive Committee of the State Chamber. Yesterday at our board meeting, we had a presentation by an individual who said that the State Chamber had advocated a 30% cut in the budget that was presented in your committee. And I asked for a fax from the state chamber today, in which it did not say that, but in fact it said that through government reorganization, including streamlining, consolidation, privatization, and things such as this, that we felt that we could cut the costs of government 30%, never alluding to the fact that we wanted to cut the budget 30%. Second thing, as the presentation by Major General Dean Cash today, absolutely magnificent. He maintains that the single greatest piece of legislation in this last century in the United States of America was the GI Bill. It gave a decided unfair advantage to the United States in future years because of the post-secondary education that we all enjoy. And so with those two things, I hope that you will take a good close look at the university and at some of the, I know, necessary cuts that you have to make. But we don't want to cut infrastructure to the point where we actually dampen the economy and not make it healthy. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fade. Next, we have Alice Murrell and then Ann Harrison.
Hi, I'm Alice Murrell. I've come to speak in favor of two things. Don't cut public television. I wouldn't have a television if it weren't for public television. I think a lot of people feel the same way. Secondly, I work for the University of Alaska in health and counseling. We've lost 5 positions and we haven't been able to replace them 100%. And it's difficult to give student services and provide services to students in general if we don't have good health care for them, good providers as far as psychological and health care. So I urge you to fund the university at President Hamilton's request, $16.3 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alice. Next, we have Ann Harrison and then John Brown.
Hi, my name is Ann Harrison. I came to address two issues. One of them is public television, which is a class act and must be funded at least at last year's level, if not increased in budget. The second thing is the university budget, which I would hope that you would listen to President Hamilton and fund the university at the level that he has advised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ann. John Brown and then Nina Majeski.
Hello, my name is John Brown. I'm the president of the Fairbanks Central Labor Council. I wanted to address the broad issue of the budget and then one specific issue. Our budget, I guess everybody here, there's a constituency for every program that the state has, a large vocal constituency, and I think everyone would agree with that. And we all know that the budget, I think there's also a large agreement that budget cuts are not the answer to our current perceived physical problems. You know, I'm very proud of the state of Alaska and the services that they provide. I think the citizens of Alaska deserve those services and want those services. I think what we need to do is to look at our budget as something that the revenue that we generate now is as being adequate for the services that we provide. It's there. The money is there. We need the courage to spend that money. And I wanted to say to the legislature that I, for one, am in favor of spending that money, continuing the state services that we have, continuing the quality of life that we enjoy in Alaska. And on an individual budget issue, I would like to reiterate what previous speaker said about Alaska's Occupational Safety and Health Administration. It just doesn't make any sense to me to have the state service go away and bring in a federal bureaucracy to oversee it. Not only are they going to bring a whole different review process that's faced with people that are in Washington, D.C. and around the country that know nothing about Alaska, it's going to totally eliminate any coverage for public employees, municipal and state, which just, I don't understand that at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Nina Majeski.
I'm Nina Majeski. I'm a 40-year resident of Fairbanks. I've seen TV here grow from almost nothing to what it is now. I'd like to enter a plea for restored funding for Alaska One. It provides education not only for the rural areas, but also for town dwellers. Local and national news are well presented and cultural interests are explored. Such information is not readily available from other sources. Please help.
Thank you. Now, Dan Kups, and I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the last name. Kupaszewski?
The person we have is Dan
Kupaszewski. Thanks for the 60 seconds that I'm going to have here. I can't understand how the legislature has time to even consider cutting $825,000 from the public broadcasting. It's such a small issue. I took your total operating budget of $3,953,487,600 and divided by $825,000. I come up with 0.00021. I think you're being penny wise and pound foolish. All you're doing is alienating a lot of people in Alaska over a very small amount of money. And I think the legislature should be focusing on the bigger issues. If you're going to get out of there in May and not have extended sessions, this merger with BP and ARCO, if BP and ARCO merge, you're going to be dealing with one company controlling over 90% of the state's income. And I don't know if the legislature would like to be in that position. So I think you just forget about this cut to public broadcasting because it's such a small, insignificant amount of money. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Wood and then Heidi Wood.
Actually, we have Natalie Thomas next.
You're right. I'm sorry. Natalie, go ahead.
I'm Natalie Thomas, and I'm sort of representing myself as a grandmother, and also I'd like to represent all the young families and families who watch public broadcasting. And I just think it's the last straw for cutting. It's sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I've lived here for 34 years, and it's witnessed the elimination of life skill programs at many levels of education. And I just view this as one more slash to young families. And this is something that Fairbanks can really be proud of because it seems to be happening mostly in Fairbanks and not in other locations. So if that's the image that we'd like to portray is that we don't support education, I think that's what we're doing very well. I just want to urge you to, I wanted to say that, I have more to say than I have time, I guess, and I wanted to say that all day long we watch the children's program with two-year-olds in the home. They range from toddler age to school-age children, and that we use all those programs. In wrapping it up, I say ties into all kinds of educational levels, from university, secondary, middle school, and on down to preschool, and that most states are putting money into human resource education, and when funding gets scarce, and that I don't know why Alaska has to always reinvent the wheel and not learn from the benefits of other states. And I just like to encourage you to support families and not cut public broadcasting, and also to fully fund the proposed budget for the university and other levels of education in general.
Thank you, Natalie. Now if we'll go to Ann Wood and then Heidi Wood.
Mr. Chairman, both Ann and Heidi would just like to observe at this point, so we're going to go on to Jeanette Grasso.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Jeanette Grasso, and I'm the president of NAMI Alaska. And I represent about 500 people in 10 communities in Alaska who either have mental illness or their family. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 51. I'm here to ask you to fully fund the mental health budget as requested. Community-based services are the most cost-effective way to treat mental illness, avoiding more expensive institutional care.
please also leave Medicaid funding intact. Many people with mental illness depend on Medicaid for the medical treatment they need to manage their illness. Treatment for mental illness works. People with mental illness can live successful lives in their community, but they need access to appropriate and effective care. When I talk to people, when I talk to mental health consumers, they don't say, I want to go to Anchorage to manage my illness. They say, I want to get the treatment I need here in Fairbanks. Please allow them the dignity to do that, as any other person with a chronic illness in this community. This will depend both on keeping funding both on the grant and the Medicaid funds. The budget amounts requested only provide basic coverage, and every year they cover more people, which does dilute the funding. So please keep funding for mental health. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm negotiating with the folks from the Mental Health Trust today on how we can best cover all the needs. I will probably have some amendments for the full Finance Committee to consider. Also on the Medicaid front, we're tracking as close as possible the Medicaid spending in the current year to determine what exact number we can anticipate for the needs for next year to cover everybody. So we continue to work on that right until the moment that we pass the bill, and then we'll continue as the Senate considers changes too.
Thank you very much.
Now, Gene Grasto, please.
I firmly agree with my wife, so I support the mental health. And so I'll just pass the seat on to the next person, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Smart man.
I just see mental health.
Teresa Lyons.
Thank you. I am Teresa Lyons, and I'm here representing the Alaska Nurses Association as their president. We are a voice for 7,000 registered nurses throughout the state of Alaska, but I can say this in 1 minute. We want to thank you for currently keeping the Medicaid budget intact and negotiating the mental health appropriation. As nurses, obviously, we very strongly support the funding for healthcare services. I would point out, though, if we continue to cut the budget around social services and community health services, you may want to add an increase factor in your Medicaid spending, because it will bear out in increased health problems through the population. There's significant evidence to suggest that. On a little different front, I was just informed today that Senate Bill 152 that was passed last session with a fiscal note, which funds for the investigation and disciplinary process for certified nurses' aides throughout the state, somehow through a clerical error, it didn't get funded. And it was, we are asking that it be put back in the budget as part of the base budget, because it did go through all of the processes and was passed without controversy, and you'll be receiving letters to that. On the last point in wrapping it up, the Nurses Association continues to support the university and President Mark Hamilton's requested budget, as well as we do advocate for public television as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Teresa. And on the funding of the position that was attached to the legislation last year, that's actually in the Commerce budget. And I believe that will be considered somewhere along the process here.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Vicki Horoski.
I'm Vicki Horoski, and I'm a foster parent and an adoptive parent. My husband and I adopted a child with fetal alcohol syndrome, and we now know the importance of having training and understanding the disability. There's not enough knowledge around the state, and it seems that fetal alcohol syndrome is being identified more and more. And we need to have money restored so that training and prevention research can continue. Also, the training of foster parents is critical. With the increase anticipated in children in foster care, foster parents need to be trained to know how to deal with children with special needs
as well as children without special needs. And then the training for adoptive parents is also critical to prevent failed adoption. We need to protect our children. We need to take good care of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard?
Yeah, I'm Richard Hordesky, and I'd just like to make a comment on 28 DFYS social workers that were promised to be hired. My wife and I, as she has stated, we are foster parents, and at the present time, we have two children in our home from DFYS. It takes at least 1 week for a social worker to return a phone call now. To get basic information from a social worker, it takes about the same amount of time. Information that would make placement a lot easier. Information like if siblings removed. We've been waiting since January to have a treatment team meeting for the kids that we now have in our home. It hasn't happened yet because the social worker doesn't have time. They can't attend IEP meetings at the school because they don't have time. To get Medicaid coupons and things sent to your home also takes a large amount of time, months sometimes. Okay. These are just a few of the areas that I'd like to bring to your attention. These areas make it very difficult to do foster care, and even makes it harder for the kids who are in foster care. And I don't understand how if you plan on bringing more children into our homes through House Bill 375, how you cannot hire these additional 28 workers for our community.
Thank you. And Tina?
My name is Tina Hordesky. I'm 13 years old, and I'm a sixth grader at Pearl Creek Elementary School. I have FAS, that means fetal alcohol syndrome. My birth mother drank alcohol when I was still in her tummy, and it's hard for me to concentrate on things like my math and writing. And it's also hard for people to understand what I have. I want people to get training so they can understand people with FAS, not just me. Thanks.
Thank you, Tina. And with regards to the special training funds, that's one of the areas that the